minutes to get there. I highly doubt we make it back tonight. We'll just have to see how things go. Somebody said you've had other uncles pass. I said it was 14 on my dad's side and 10 on my mom's, so I had a bunch of aunts and uncles. There's still several left. Genesis 38. Last week we finished up chapter 37. We talked about the sale of Joseph into Egyptian bondage, if you will. We said that most of the rest of Genesis is about Joseph. But in fact, chapter 37, verse 2 says this is the history of Jacob. So ultimately, the rest of Genesis is about Jacob's family. Chapter 38 kind of seems to come into play here, and it seems like it doesn't belong. You've got the sale of Joseph, then you've got chapter 38 that has absolutely nothing to do with him. Chapter 39 is going to pick back up the story where Joseph is in Potiphar's house and all of that. Chapter 38, though, is very important. We only have 20 minutes, but I'm going to be really quick this morning. Maybe I'll finish the chapter. But if I ask you the question, why did the children of Israel need to go to Egyptian bondage? Is that a fair question? God said all the way back in chapter 15, you know, told Abraham, he says, your descendants are going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs, and after, you know, 400 years, they're going to come out. Why did they need to go into Egyptian bondage? You say, well, maybe a lot of reasons, right? You say, you're the teacher, tell us what you think. They needed to go into Egyptian bondage for a few different reasons. One of the biggest ones is what we're going to study in chapter 38. God intended for his people to remain pure, to keep the bloodline pure. The messianic line is going through. And chapter 38 shows us that they needed to be into a place where that was going to happen. Because as long as they wandered around the land of Canaan, you know what they were going to do? They were going to intermarry. They were going to get involved in things that they had no business getting involved in, all of that. And that's what chapter 38 is about. Judah is a direct descendant of Jesus. We find that out at the end of the book of Genesis. We've not got there yet, but you guys know that. Judah was a direct descendant of Jesus, and this is an account of Judah, chapter 38, and the mess that he made. And God even used the mess that he made to bring Jesus about. God even used the marriage that he shouldn't have been involved in, the prostitution that happened. God's going to use somebody that played the part of a prostitute to bring about the lineage of Jesus. Again, I've said this over and over again. God will work in spite of us. And God is working in spite of Judah in chapter 38. God's holiness does not negate his grace, and God's grace does not negate his holiness. And maybe you say, I don't understand that. I believe this story helps us to understand that. God's holiness is that he expects his people to be right and good and what they're supposed to be, but God's people aren't always like that. And if you think you are, then you're struggling with pride. So again, you're not what you should be anyways. But even though God's holiness is there and God expects us to be holy, God can still be gracious. And just because God is gracious does not negate the fact that he expects us to be holy. So God works those two things in together. So in chapter 38, it's going to show us why the children of Israel needed to be in Egyptian bondage. Because when they went into Egyptian bondage, the Egyptians didn't want anything to do with them. They're shepherds. They looked upon them. They frowned upon them. They didn't want to intermarry with them. They didn't want any part of them. And they put them off into their own place in Goshen. And it allowed them to be what God intended for them to be. And it also allowed them to grow into a mighty nation that could come out and then go back into the promised land to conquer it. So we see part of that as we go through. All right, so chapter 38, quickly. It says, it came to pass at that time that Judah departed from his brethren. Now I put a box around that in my Bible because what happens to us when we separate ourselves from God's people? Nothing good, right? When you separate yourself from God's people and you intermingle with the world, there's always going to be problems that follow. So Judah departed from his brethren, and he visited a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. Adullamite was one of some of the people of the land of Canaan. So he made a friend of the land, and he left his brethren, and he started hanging out with his friend. What does 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 tell us about evil companions? They corrupt good morals, right? They corrupt what you know to be right. Well, that's what happened. Not that Judah was ever a great person to start with, but still. Verse 2, and Judah saw, I underline saw, this was purely physical. Judah went into this land of Canaan, he made a friend, and he sees a beautiful woman, and you know what he says? I want her. He takes her, the Bible says. She was a daughter of a certain Canaanite. Doesn't even tell us her name. The Canaanite's name was Shua, and he married her, and he went into her. So she conceived and bore a son and called his name Er. And she conceived again and bore a son and called his name Onan. And she conceived yet again and bore a son and called his name Shelah. He was at Chezeb when she bore him. So Judah married this Canaanite woman, had three boys. Three boys. Verse 6. Then Judah took a wife for Er, his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. Now Tamar is throughout the rest of this story. But Er, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. What did this guy do? I don't know, but apparently he was pretty bad, because he was so bad that the Lord decided to take him out. All right. It says, verse 8, and Judah said to Onan, go into your brother's wife and marry her, and raise up an heir to your brother. You know, in the law of Moses, and you might write in your Bibles, I encourage you to do so, Deuteronomy chapter 25, verses 5 through 10, this was in the law of Moses. This became a part of the law of Moses, but this is a long time before that law was put into place. But that law says if you married a woman and you died before you had children, then the law says your brother goes in and marries your widow, and he raises up an heir to you. And Jesus even talks about that in Matthew chapter 22. It was talked about marriage in heaven and all of that. But even before that law was instituted, it was already in place. So Judah's command to his second son was, hey, you go in to your brother's widow and you conceive seed. You have children to be an heir to your brother. But Onan knew that the heir would not be his. Now notice that. His brother, the one that the second son was going to go in, and he knew that the heir would not be his, and you know, he was not going to have the rights of the firstborn. It was going to convey to the son that he had. And it came to pass, when he went in to his brother's wife, that he admitted on the ground, lest he should give her an heir to his brother. So when they would have sexual relations, he would not allow her to be with child. He did not want to get her pregnant and all of that. So he took means upon his own to not allow that to happen. He didn't want a child to be an heir to his brother because he was selfish. Verse 10, and the thing which he did displeased the Lord, therefore he killed him also. God is highly upset with these sons of Judah. Apparently Judah probably wasn't a very good father. I mean, if all his sons were so wicked that God's killing them, apparently he's not doing a very good job. But this thing that his second son did was he was disobedient to his father's command. He told him to go in and have children with his brother's widow, and he would not do that. All right, verse 11. Then Judah said to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in your father's house till my son Shelah is grown, for he said, lest he also die like his brothers. And Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. So Judah, as far as he knows, Tamar is the problem. Perhaps Judah doesn't know that the Lord killed Er because he was wicked. Perhaps Judah doesn't know, you know, the sexual relationship history between his second son and Tamar. And Judah has absolutely no intention of giving his third son to this woman. Because in his eyes, look at what he said. He says, you go stay a widow in your father's house till my third son is grown. But look at what he says. He says, I don't want him to die too. So he really had no intentions of giving him to this lady. Judah, again, probably thought that she was the problem and she was the reason that his sons were dying, and he didn't understand. So Tamar went and dwelt in her father's house. Verse 12, now in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died. So now Judah is a widower. It says, and Judah was comforted and went up to his sheep shears at Timnah, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite. So Judah's wife died, and he decides to go hang out with the boys, if you will. Put it in language that we will understand. And I know that that's what was going on by what's coming to pass later. This whole thing of the annual sheep shearing was when all of these guys would come together, and you know, it was a time that they would shear the sheep, but it was also a time of partying, I'm sure, and all of those other things. So he was comforted by doing that, by going and hanging out with the boys and having a big time. Verse 13, And it was told to Tamar, saying, "Look, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah to shear his sheep." So she took off her widow's garments, covered herself with a veil, and wrapped herself and sat in an open place, which was on the way to Timnah, for she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given to him as a wife. She saw that what Judah had promised her was not happening. Many years had gone by, and this young man, his third son, was grown, was well old enough to be married, and she said that Judah was not going to give him like he promised. So she goes up, and she changes her garments, and she sits in the open place playing the part of a prostitute. Now, if this annual sheep shearing was not a party, how would she know that this was the perfect time to go play the part of a prostitute? She knew what happened there. She knew what kind of event it was, and she knew this was the perfect opportunity to get one up on her father-in-law. She was wanting to get the child that she felt that she deserved, that Judah had promised. He told his second son to give her a child. He didn't do it. He promised her third son, or his third son. He didn't keep that promise. She was going to take matters into her own hands, and she wanted to have a child. So she goes up, she changes and dresses like a prostitute, and she sits in the open place. Verse 15, it says, "When Judah saw her, he thought she was a harlot, because she had covered her face. Then he turned to her by the way, and he says, 'Please let me come into you.'" For he did not know that she was his daughter-in-law. You think this is Judah's first time of doing this? No. He knows what's going on, doesn't he? This is the annual sheep shearing. I have no doubt that he's been there many times, and probably he's done this very thing many times. He sees what he thinks is a harlot. His wife is gone. He's having a big time. He's partying with the guys, and he decides that he wants to get him a prostitute. He doesn't know who it is. Her face is covered. Perhaps all he can see is her eyes. So she said, "What will you give me that you may come into me?" And he said, "I will send a young goat from the flock." So the price of a prostitute was a young goat from the flock. That was what she wanted, and she was okay with that. And that's what Judah had offered. So she said, "Will you give me a pledge till you send it?" Give me a pledge. Well, let's look at it this way. Just say your profession was a prostitute, and you go and you carry out that profession. You don't know whether or not you're going to get paid, do you, I guess? So part of the thing that happened during all of this was of some sort of pledge. You give me something to hold that is yours that you want back, and she was going to hold that until Judah came through with the payment. And so, again, that was the purpose of this pledge. Well, Judah said, "What pledge shall I give you?" So she said, "Your signet, your cord, and your staff that is in your hand." She, again, knew exactly what she was doing. What is a signet? A signet would be a stamp. And, you know, if you were living during this time period, your stamp, it would be your symbol. That would mean that was from you. It would be just yours. Nobody else was going to have one like it. So she knew what she was doing. She says, "I want your signet, I want your cord, I want your staff." I have no doubt that each of these three things was something that Judah would have that would be tied to him. And she knew that. She knew exactly what she was doing. Well, Judah, he's fine with that. He knows what he wants. So he gives them to her, and he goes into her, and she conceived by him. So she arose, went away, and laid aside her veil, put on the garments of her widowhood. Well, the deed has happened. She goes out. Judah thinks, you know, okay, everything's fine. Verse 20, Judah sent the young goat by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot who was openly by the roadside?" So Judah, he doesn't send payment himself. He sends his friend. "Hey, you go give this goat to this young lady. She was a harlot, a prostitute." And, you know, perhaps he didn't want to do that because maybe it would bring shame upon him. And so he wanted somebody else to do it. So he goes and he can't find her. So he asks some of the people. He says, "Where's the harlot? Where's the harlot?" The interesting thing in this is you don't see this in your English Bibles, but in the Hebrew, the word for harlot here is different than it is in verse 15. You see, part of the Canaanite worship and their worship of false gods involved the use of temple prostitutes. So in verse 15, when Judah thinks that this is just a normal harlot, that word is different than the word that is used here and in the following verse. This word for harlot means one that is dedicated to the temple worship. This idea of being a harlot here is somebody that's sanctified. Not in the sense that you and I look at it, but sanctified means set apart for a specific act of whatever it may be. So these people and this friend, this Adullamite friend, he thinks that this was a temple prostitute, that this was part of the worship that was going on there in this area that they were in. So he goes and he asks, where's the temple prostitute? Well, they said there wasn't a temple prostitute in this place. We didn't, you know, that maybe happens next week. I don't know, there wasn't one here now. Well, so we return to Judah. And he says, I cannot find her. Also, the men of this place said there was no harlot in this place. I can't find her. Verse 23, well, Judah says, let her take them for herself, lest we be shamed. For I sent this young goat, and you have not found her. You know, Judah says, just let it go. Let it go. She got a pledge. She got something that maybe is enough value to her. I tried to pay. And he says, you know, I don't want to press this any further, because what happens when you press a situation like this further? Embarrassment, right? Shame. And Judah knows that. He says, I'm not going to just continue to look for her. Just let it go. And Judah, he thinks everything's just finished, right? Okay, I did something I shouldn't do. Okay, it's all over. It's done for. Verse 24. It says, and it came to pass about 3 months after Judah was told, saying, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot. Furthermore, she is with child by harlotry. Well, Judah gets this word. He has went into harlots, and we said this is probably not his first time. He knows exactly what he's doing. And he gets word that Tamar is pregnant. And she's pregnant because she has played the part of a prostitute. Well, Judah says, bring her out and let her be burned. That's a double standard, isn't it? Judah's perfectly fine with going into a harlot, but when he finds out that his daughter-in-law has played the part of a harlot, he says, let her be burned. Judah shows no mercy. He's hypocritical. And the New Testament tells us a lot about that, right? James chapter 2, verse 13, him who shows no mercy be shown to him. And so Judah, he's going to learn his lesson the hard way. All right, verse 25. When she was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law and says, now, if you were Tamar and you found out that your father-in-law says that you need to be burned for what you've done, and what would you do? You'd probably be screaming and all of these things, and you'd be calling him out, and she's had a plan this whole time. She knew how all of this was going to play out. So when she was brought out and they were going to convict her of this and more than likely burn her, she said, by the man to whom these belong, I am with child. And she says, please determine whose these are, this signet, this cord, and this staff. Well, the tables have turned, haven't they? You know, she's going out on trial to be burned, and she says, I'm with child by whoever these three things belong to. Well, Judah, he can't deny that, can he? He remembers what happened. So Judah acknowledged them and he said, she has been more righteous than I because I did not give her to Shelah my son, and he never knew her again. Judah acknowledged that he didn't do what he said he would do. He didn't acknowledge that he sinned by going into a harlot. Didn't acknowledge that he sinned by getting her, all of these other things. But he just acknowledged that he didn't do what he said he would do by giving her a third son. So she is with child. And the Bible goes on to say, now it came to pass at the time for giving birth that behold, twins were in her womb. And so it was when she was giving birth that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took a scarlet thread and bound it on his hand and said, this one came out first. Then it happened as he drew back his hand that his brother came out unexpectedly. And she said, how did you break through? This breach be upon you. Therefore his name was called Perez, because his brother came out who had the scarlet thread on his hand, and his name was called Zerah. And you say, why is all of that in there? Turn over to Matthew chapter 1, please, quickly. We've got just a minute. Matthew chapter 1. This whole account is there to show us the grace and the mercy of God and how God will work through us in spite of all the things that we might get ourselves into. When you get to Matthew chapter 1 and you begin to read through Matthew chapter 1, you're going to read the genealogy of Jesus Christ. And there's going to be five names of women in the genealogy of Jesus. Look at the first one. Look at verse 2 or verse 3. Judah begat Perez and Zerah by Tamar. What did Tamar do to get to be in the genealogy of Jesus Christ? She played the part of a harlot, right? She played the part of the harlot. Keep on looking down. Look down at verse 5. Salmon begat Boaz by Rahab. And Rahab and Boaz begat Obed by Ruth. Well, what about Rahab? What was she? A harlot. Who was Ruth? Ruth was a Moabitess. Look at verse 6. Her who had been the wife of Uriah, who is that? Bathsheba. Bathsheba had been involved in a whole scandal, hasn't she? And then you've got the fifth woman that is Mary. The purpose of all of this is to show that God can use anybody to accomplish his purpose. You've got several people here that played the part of a harlot. You've got one that was a Moabitess. A Moabitess was from the illicit union between Lot and one of his daughters, and she was the descendant of that. Bathsheba, again, you know the whole scandal, but the point of all of that is God's mentioned those five women. Now, Mary was a virgin when she was married. Everything was good and right. But four of those five women had a shady past and had done a lot of shady things, but God used them anyways. You and I, we aren't going to always do what we're supposed to do. We're not going to always make the right decision, but you know what God can do? God can use us anyways. And God used Tamar throughout this situation. And that's why the children of Israel needed to go into the Egyptian bondage so things could be like God intended for them to be, because if left to themselves, they were sure going to make a mess. I appreciate your attention.